Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and it's actually going to be Series Rundown Part 2. A few weeks ago, it was on February 5th, I released an episode that I had previously recorded in October of 2016 that ran down what at that time was every series that Aftershock had come out with to date. Well, it's been, you know, a year and a half or so since then, and Aftershock has come out with nearly 20 new titles since then, so just wanted to give a quick rundown of what those titles are and my thoughts on some of those titles. A lot of them haven't yet been released, so I'll just talk about what I do know about them so far, and if you're curious to have even more analysis of that, you can go back and listen to last week's episode, which covered the upcoming titles. So, as I mentioned, there's about 20 titles, I think 19 to be exact, that Aftershock has come out with since October of 2016 that I didn't cover in the first series rundown. So I'm going to be talking about 9 of those tonight, and then in a few weeks I'll probably do a rundown part 3 to cover the last one. So the first book I'll mention is one of those titles that I covered in last week's upcoming books episode. It's A Walk Through Hell from writer Garth Ennis. Art is by Goran Seduska, and colors are by Ive Zvercina. So this is a really interesting book that I'm really looking forward to. It's slated to come out in May 2018. It's the story of two FBI agents who go to investigate the disappearance of two other agents at a warehouse on a Long Beach pier. And it's a return to horror for Garth Ennis. He hasn't written any horror since 2008 or 2009, the last time he worked on his Crossed series from Avatar Press. So it's been quite a while. But apparently, what that break, and also as time has gone by, has allowed Garth to do is sort of gain a subtlety to his writing. Because from all everything I've heard, and all parties who've commented on it so far, it's this very subtle horror for Garth, which is would be a big departure from his Cross series, right? Which is very much gory and visceral and in your face. So for that reason, I'm very much looking forward to this, and just kind of the dichotomy of finding like a gateway to hell on a mundane dock warehouse or warehouse dock in Long Beach, California. I mean, it just seems that's very incongruous, right? It doesn't fit. So I'm very curious. And from the few preview pages I've seen, I'm very much intrigued because it's the two FBI agents who are assigned to locate the previous agents that are missing show up. There's local police there. They're like, why isn't SWAT here? And come to find out the SWAT team, this experienced and cynical and jaded SWAT team, has showed up, walked inside the warehouse for 30 seconds, got spooked and left. That says a lot about how terrifying it must be in there. And so just based on everything I've seen and based on the track record that Garth Ennis has, I tend to really enjoy his stuff, especially his independent stuff, his ideas that are more sort of out there or just completely separate from anything else, like Crossed or Dreaming Eagles. You know, I tend to enjoy that stuff more than his stuff he does for the big two, like working on Hellblazer or Punisher. So very much looking forward to this book. As I said, May 2018 is the release date. And obviously when it gets closer, I'll be talking about it and teasing it a bit more. The next title I'm going to mention is Animosity Evolution from writer Marguerite Bennett, artist Eric Gapster, and colorist Rob Schwager. So this spins out of the Animosity title that's been a big hit for Aftershock from writer Marguerite Bennett. And this is actually a continuation of the Animosity, The Rise three-part series that came out. And I'm not sure if they just decided to do a second Animosity title because of the strength of the first one, or just the fact that Marguerite had so many stories to tell. You know, Animosity itself is based more on the East Coast, with the main character Jessie and her dog, who is trying to actually get her to California to her stepbrother. And, you know, he's a veterinarian, he's based in San Francisco, and he's actually one of the main characters in the Animosity: The Rise series. So, and his name is Adam North. And what's interesting is, so the Animosity series, as I said, based on the East Coast, and it's more of a anarchy sort of reigns in that book, right? It's not, you know, New York City was kind of falling apart, different factions fighting, no one really in control. Animosity: The Rise miniseries, and then Animosity Evolution, which spun out after that, more tells more of the tale of what's happening in San Francisco. And it's much more organized and controlled and political. Not to say one is better than the other. Not to say, and I don't mean that one book is better than the other, but one system is better than the other. And perhaps that's why Marguerite decided to tell these kind of two differing takes, right? There's two ways you can go when this crazy event happens. You know, the premise behind Animosity being all of a sudden one day animals wake up, they all gain sentience, they're all able to talk. And I know it doesn't really make complete sense, and Marguerite acknowledges that, because there's plenty of animals that don't have vocal cords. Or why do they all speak the same language? How are they all able to think the same and understand the same concepts? You know, I mean, some of these animals wouldn't even have brains large enough to control language centers and stuff like that. So you got to take it all with a grain of salt. And we don't know the reason behind it. We don't know exactly how it happened. Is it something scientific? Is it something supernatural? Is it something spiritual? I mean, we don't know any of that. But what she has done in telling these two different tales, you know, one set in San Francisco, one set in the East Coast with Jesse and her dog Sandor trying to – Sandor's actually trying to take Jesse, who lost her parents in this chaotic time, trying to take her cross country to her brother Adam, who's a vet in San Francisco, because Sandor knows, you know, he's a dog, and so his time is very limited. You know, it doesn't have a long lifespan, but loves Jesse unconditionally and wants to make sure she's safe there. So that's the story going on in Animosity. And as I said, it's much more chaotic than the story that's happening in Animosity Evolution, because as I said, that book is much more political. In San Francisco, there's a genetically engineered wolf that goes by the name of Wintermute that somehow managed to rise to power when this awakening happened. And she has followers, she has people that are loyal to her, both animals and human, that are basically following her orders and buy into what she's trying to do. She's trying to keep the peace. She's trying to provide food for everyone. She's trying to make sure everyone works and contributes. And so it's very much contrasted to what's going on in the Animosity book. So that's what Animosity Evolution is all about. Kind of the political side and the machinations that go on behind the scenes. And some of these animals get pretty ruthless. So it's a good title. It's a good companion series. I think you get a more complete story of the world of Animosity by reading both. All right, next up is Baby Teeth from writer Donnie Cates, art by Gary Brown, and colors by Mark Englert. So this is a super interesting book. Didn't like it at first, maybe the first three or four issues, and then it gradually won me over to where I'm really digging it now. The premise is that Sadie Ritter is 16 years old, and she's 9 months pregnant. She's scared out of her mind. You know, having a baby's tough when you're that young, but her sister is the only one that knows about it, and then they eventually tell her father. But, oh yeah, her baby also happens to be the Antichrist. It wasn't like she was out there sleeping around. She swears that she was not physical with anyone, and the baby just happened. And so the reason I didn't like it so much early on was I felt like, you know, I was being beaten over the head with religion. But as it's gone on, and Donnie Cates has opened the world up to this conspiracy of different factions and what they know and don't know about the baby and what may or may not be true, it's opened up a new world. It's much more Illuminati and conspiracy theory and hidden powers and hidden factions trying to control the fate of the planet and the human race. And so it's really interesting, and I find Sadie to be, you know, relatable. the voice that Donny Cates gives her is she's believable as a 16-year-old scared out of her mind. Her father's an interesting character who has a background that we're not 100%. We know he was in the Marines. He's now a commercial airline pilot, but he seems like he's way competent, more so than we've been led to believe from just, you know, being a Marine and then an airline pilot. Like, what did he do when he was in the Marines? You know, was he special forces or anything like that? Also, Sadie has a sister who's kind of a take no crap kind of person who gives some levity and I don't want to say a voice of reason, but she really kind of cuts through the crap. And then recently we've met Sadie's mom who seems to be involved in one of the sides of the conspiracies that kind of wants to rule the world. And we find out that's how Sadie's lineage was destined to birth the Antichrist. And yeah, you really fall down the rabbit hole and the religion starts to fall by the wayside in lieu of just great characterization and interesting like plot twists and kind of a feeling of, man, this book's crazy. I wonder what's going to happen next. Plus, there's this like purple mutant demon raccoon creature, which is really weird looking. You just can't help but stare at him when he's on the page. So I'll give it points for that as well. Really interesting book. And Donny Cates, you know, he's one of the hottest names in comics right now as far as writers go. Whether that's completely earned or not, I can't really say because I haven't read a ton of his work. I've been buying his Thanos series, although I haven't had a chance to read it. But his God Country from, you know, Image got great reviews. He's going to be doing Venom for Marvel. So, as I said, he's really an up-and-coming name. So something to watch out for. So I guess if you're a fan of Rosemary's Baby or just crazy conspiracy theory type comics, I'd give Baby Teeth a try. All right, up next is Backways from Justin Jordan, art by Eleonora Carlini and colors by Sylvia Today. So we had Justin on the show about a month back, maybe a little longer, to talk about Backways, and it's a pretty interesting story. Justin's really channeling like Dark Crystal and Labyrinth and those kind of movies. That's the feel he's kind of going for, aiming for a little bit of a young adult audience. But that's not to say that anyone can't read it because it's not super gory. It doesn't, you know, it's not super scary. It definitely has a feel of like classic fantasy adventure. And the antagonist is a young teenage girl. And she finds that she has the ability to travel through the backways. And what the backways are is they're the kind of the forgotten places, the nooks and crannies that people have forgotten. So abandoned houses, basements, attics, garages, things like that, where the supernatural beings of the world are able to use as a means of travel and a place to inhabit. So magic does actually exist. Not everyone possesses it. Not everyone who's even in the backways has it, but they're able to see it. And so it's about the different relationships that are going on between these different factions and them trying to exist in this world that exists within our world, but is still at the same time kind of hidden. And we know that Anna, our protagonist, had a friend, Sylvia, who disappeared, and she believed disappeared into the backways, and she travels to the backways and discovers that she has this power to travel to the backways and is in search of Sylvia. And she's so single-minded in her search that she's able to kind of just accept the backways for what it is on the surface very quickly without asking a lot of questions, because all she cares about is finding her friend. And we're going to find out later on that single-mindedness may be both an asset and a detriment. It allows her to just accept and keep searching, but it may keep her from asking questions that she probably should ask. So the first two issues have come out. It's a really, really fun book. The art by Eleonora Carlini is perfectly suited to the book. A little bit of an anime cartoony feel to it, and it's been really enjoyable so far. I definitely recommend it. And Justin Jordan is proving to me that he's a writer I should definitely pay attention to. All right, next up is Betrothed from writer Sean Lewis and artist Stephen Yu. This book has yet to be released, but it's coming out very soon. It's, I believe, March is when the first issue will come out. And again, this is a book I talked about in the upcoming titles episode last week. And it's basically kind of a Romeo and Juliet story. There's a couple of teenagers that go to the same high school. They're actually from another plane of existence or another universe where they are the heirs to the thrones or the leaders of these two armies that are fighting for limited resources. So it looks really good. It looks fun. Again, a bit of an anime style to the art. I go into a lot more detail with Betrothed in that upcoming titles episode, so I encourage you to go back and listen to that. Next up, we have Blood Blister from writer Phil Hester and artist Tony Harris, with inks from Eric Layton and colors by Guy Major. So this book is really freaky. Only two issues have come out. Not sure when issue 3 is going to come out. There's been some delays due to various unforeseen circumstances. But basically, it's a story of this lawyer named Brandon Hull, who is pretty much amoral. I mean, the guy's got no scruples whatsoever. He'll lie, cheat, steal, do whatever he has to do to get ahead. And in issue 2 of the series, we find out from him that he's supposedly, what he says is he's doing all this so that his kids can be good people. You know, they can be the good people that he couldn't be. You know, by him guaranteeing their future by doing whatever he can to be successful and get money, basically, so that he can provide for his kids. And he does seem to have genuine affection for his children. When the topic comes up of his ex-wife taking his kids and moving across country, because he lives in Chicago, and his wife is talking about moving to California, he doesn't seem to be really happy about that. But whether it's all an act, I mean, just based on who the guy is, what we learn about him in issues 1 and 2, we don't know that we can believe anything that comes out of the guy's mouth. He may always be just shining people on, right? But what's happened is he has a blood blister on his arm, and it seems to be getting worse and worse. And apparently, from what I can kind of gather, is it starts to manifest so that the ugliness of his soul starts to show up on the outside more than just as a blood blister on his arm, but starts to disfigure him. So not sure. I mean, just from reading the first couple issues, I do want to know more. I do hope the series returns. But I'm also not sure if I'm supposed to root for this guy. I kind of got the feeling like, man, I hope he can redeem himself. I want to like him. I want him to realize the error of his ways and you know, not in a religious way repent, but just realize that he just needs to be a better person. You know, he can't just be this horrible, awful liar who will do anything and, you know, sacrifice others and hurt others and harm others just so he can get ahead. He's got to realize that that's just not the way you live your life, you know, regardless of any religious implications. You know, it's just not, I just don't think as humans that that's how we should be, you know, not live in a functioning society. It's not okay for him to sacrifice others so that he can provide a future for his children. Because what if everybody did that? There'd be no future for anyone, right? So, like I said, I want to like him. He's pretty scuzzy. But I do hope the series returns because it was a great start from that creative team. All right, next up is another one of the titles that I talked about in the upcoming titles episode. It's Brothers Dracul from Cullen Bunn, artist Mirko Kolak, and colors by Maria Santalala. So this is the story based somewhat on real events of Vlad Tepes, who many know was the basis for the legend of Vlad Dracula, and also his brother, Radu. So in their teenage years, you know, the area where they lived, Transylvania, was overtaken by the Ottoman Empire. These brothers were basically held hostage and they learned many things: archery, writing, combat, matters of court. And here's where the fiction part comes in: how to stalk and slay vampires. Cullen Bunn's a great writer. He's doing Dark Arc for Aftershock. He did Unholy Grail. He's writing X-Men Blue, Deadpool, and previously wrote Venom for Marvel, wrote Aquaman over at DC. So he's got a wide body of work, and some of it is, most of it is really, really, really good. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm interested in seeing where this goes. The art by Mirko Kolak, I expect to be good. Mirko is an artist whose art I very much enjoy. Not quite as clean as I usually prefer, but it's very visceral art, so I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, being that it's somewhat based on real historical facts is interesting to me, and I can't wait to see how Vlad Tepes goes from being trained on how to stalk and slay vampires to becoming the great lord of the undead himself. So really looking forward to that one. It's slated to be released in April. All right, up next is Cold War from Christopher Sabella, art by Hayden Sherman. And again, much like Justin Jordan, I had Christopher Sabella on the show not too long ago to talk about issue one. I've actually read issue one and two. There's a big twist that happens at the end of issue one that's you really don't see coming at all. And based on that twist, what happens in issue two is really cool. You get a whole different narrative and a whole different spin on it. So the art by Hayden Sherman, it's somewhat, looks like it's somewhat influenced by John Romita Jr., but it's not quite as clean as I would like. You know, the storytelling's pretty good. It does get choppy at times here or there, but just based on the rendering sometimes, I have a hard time seeing exactly what's happening in the panel. So I'm hoping as the series goes on that Hayden cleans it up a little bit. But basically, the premise is that, so people have paid money to have their heads removed from their bodies when they die and be held in cryogenic stasis so that when the sufficient technology exists in the future, their bodies can be regrown and they can be brought back to life for whatever killed them. And so imagine their surprise when these people are actually brought back to life, but instead of this utopian future that they're expecting, they're actually brought back to life and told that they are going to be soldiers, foot soldiers in a war. And they're going to have to fight for the United States because apparently countries still exist. It's kind of like the ultimate joke, right? Expecting to wake up in the future and have everything be great, but in fact, things are even worse than when you died. So it's a pretty interesting story. The first two issues, as I said, were really good, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here. You know, issue one, issue two, both in a way had twists at the end that kind of throw you for a loop. Like you think you know who the main character is going to be, and then it kind of switches. Oh, wait, maybe it's not that character. Maybe it's this character. And then you read issue two and you think, yeah, okay, it's this character. And then something happens. And you're like, oh, wait, maybe it's not that character. Maybe it's going to be another character. So I encourage you, if it sounds interesting, go back and listen to the episode with Christopher Sabella where we talk about it more in depth, and definitely pick up Cold War. It's really interesting. Great concept. All right, and the last title I'm going to talk about in this series rundown is Dark Arc. As I mentioned, it's written by Cullen Bunn, who's doing the Brothers Dracul series that's coming up soon. The art is by Juan Doe. Juan Doe's art, I'll talk about that a little bit first. It's got very much of a cartoony style, almost like a Saturday morning cartoony style, but that's so dichotomous with the topic of this book, the kind of the main idea, right? So Dark Arc, it's a story of the flood. And, you know, we all know that story, the biblical flood. You know, God went to Noah and said, I'm going to send a flood to cleanse the earth. There's too much evil and I want to kind of start over, but I want you to save the animals, take them and put them on this ark, you know, two by two. You know, do what I say, you and your family will live. And then when the flood waters recede, you know, these animals will, and you and your family will repopulate the earth. That's the story of how the natural creatures got saved. But what about the unnatural creatures? What about the manticores and the naga and the bugbears and the werewolves and the vampires? Well, it turns out there was a sorcerer by the name of Shrey who was charged by, it doesn't say it's the devil or Satan himself, but some kind of evil demon-like entity like that to save the unnatural creatures of the world. But that's a big task, right? I mean, you can't just take all these quote-unquote evil creatures, these quote-unquote monsters, and put them on an ark and expect them to get along. First of all, you've got to take other humans along with you as prisoners to be their food, which we see. And then you've got to have all these monsters underfoot and try to have them get along when they're starving and all they want to do is kill each other and eat each other. So it's a very tenuous relationship. And not only that, but despite the fact that they know where Noah and his ark is, and there's many animals on that ark that could be considered food for the creatures of the dark ark, they've got to ensure that Noah and his ark survive. They can't, it's not just leave them alone. It's not just don't attack them and don't eat them. It's if Noah and his ark is in trouble, you've got to help them. You've got to ensure that Noah and his family and all those creatures survive, because there has to be food going forward when the floodwaters recede and the unnatural creatures are unleashed. They've got to have food at that point, right? They need the world to be populated with people and animals and all that kind of stuff so they can have something to feast on, so they can have prey. So he's got Shrey, the sorcerer who's charged with this mission of saving the unnatural creatures. He actually has an even harder job than Noah, because Noah's just got to worry about one ark, just got to worry about the natural creatures. Shrey has to worry about himself, his family, the natural creatures, and the unnatural. He's got to make sure they all survive. And if he doesn't make sure they all survive, him and his family are doomed for all eternity. So it's quite the undertaking there. Whereas Noah, you know, he's doing God's will, and if something were to happen and the boat were to sink, God would probably be like, well, you know, you did your best. I'm certainly not going to send you to hell and make you suffer eternal damnation. You followed my orders. You did the best you could. It didn't work out. So be it. So it's an interesting story. The first 5 issues have come out so far. Issue 6, I believe, is the final issue, and it's slated to come out in May of this year. So that's going to do it for the Aftershock series rundown part 2. As I said, I'll be doing part 3 soon to cover the other 10 or so series that I haven't yet talked about. I hope these episodes are useful. I hope you guys are able to listen to them and get a good idea of what each of the Aftershock series that have been released so far are about. And it'll give you an idea of which ones that you may want to pick up the trade or go look for the single issues. There's a lot of variety, a lot of different stories to tell, but I feel like they're all of pretty high quality to very, very high quality. Some of them are absolutely outstanding, like Replica, which I feel didn't get its due, which is a completely amazing story, and others that I'm really looking forward to, like A Walk Through Hell, the Dreaming Eagle series from Garth Ennis, which was absolutely incredible, the Jimmy's Bastards that's coming out, also from Garth Ennis, which is really, really good. So there's definitely a lot for everybody from Aftershock. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening to us. Be sure you go to the comicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can find us on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us there. All 3 of those social media places are great places to find out when we drop new episodes, follow along as we talk to comic creators, and keep up with all the conventions we're attending and our convention coverage. Don't forget, we've migrated all our content over to lrmonline.com, and in just a few short weeks, probably starting about a week from today, all our content will be released over there. And when you do go over to LRM Online to follow comic news and all our podcasts and coverage going forward, be sure you check out all the other great pop culture content at LRM Online, covering movies and TV shows and video games and all that kind of great stuff. So that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.